scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captain of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. We're included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Well, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And greetings from Technocracy News and Trends. Patrick Wood here, editor-in-chief and founder of Technocracy News and Trends. I went back to the 1930s to do a little discovery to find out if space travel was an issue back then, if people were dreaming about going to outer space. And lo and behold, I find out, yes, some things I had probably forgotten about. But in 1936, the miniseries Flash Gordon was introduced. There was 13 chapters to that particular serial. It starred Larry Buster Crabb, Gene Rogers, and Charles Middleton. And then just a little bit later, in 1938, the series was obviously so popular, the same stars, Larry Buster Crabb and so on, created another series of 15 chapters entitled Flash Gordon's Trip to Mars. Now, Flash Gordon was a space traveler. He had a spaceship. By today's standards of effects and so on that are used in movies, I remember Flash Gordon's spaceship was pretty corny, but nevertheless, they were dreaming. A little bit later in 1939, probably in competition with Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers was introduced with a 12-chapter serial film, and it starred, again, oddly enough, Larry Buster Crabb, two other prominent actors of that day, Constance Moore and Jackie Moran. So Buck Rogers also was a space traveler. And this was pure science fiction, of course. There were no spaceships back then. But it did demonstrate that people, during that time, this is when technocracy was in its heyday, by the way, in the 1930s, people were already dreaming about outer space and space travel. Well, we know today that prominent technocrats, especially the billionaire technocrats in the world, are not only dreaming about space travel, but they're doing something about it. Jeff Bezos, of course, is building spaceships, rockets to go into space. So is Elon Musk. They're both billionaires, of course, and Jeff Bezos is the richest man on earth currently. But there are others in other countries, technocrats that is, that are dreaming about outer space. So the first story today speaks about Asgardia. And the title of the story is Asgardia's Technocracy Space Nation Seeks 15 Million Faithful. They're gathering citizens, that is, to join their citizenship, receive a passport, and hopefully some of them may well inhabit a space platform someday that will be considered a separate nation from anything on Earth. And my comments in this article is not just U.S. technocrat billionaires who want to colonize space. A Russian billionaire's Asgardia plan is to create the first space nation to offer citizenship and passports, and that's exactly what they're doing. This article states, a Russian billionaire is wrapping up plans to save humanity by creating a floating, quote, garden of gods in the solar system for 15 million lucky people. Now that is a big space colony. Igor Ashubeli is the Azeri Russian tycoon behind Asgardia, a project launched 3 years ago to establish permanent peace in space. In 2017, the group sent a satellite, Asgardia 1, into low Earth orbit and declared sovereignty over the space it occupies. The outlandish ambitions do not cease there, but head of nation, Dr. Ashubeli, has sought to prove this is more than just a sci-fi fantasy. Earlier this year, Asgardia unveiled plans to build a fleet of cosmic Noah's Arks orbiting the Earth at a cost of roughly 100 billion pounds for a piece of its micronation. Former Liberal Democrat MP Lembit Opik was elected as chairman of the Parliament of Asgardia during its first session in Vienna, Austria. He is part of a British corps involved in the project that also includes Tory Brexiter Nigel Evans, who chairs the Asgardian Parliament's Foreign Affairs Committee, and Philip Appleby, a foreign minister of defense official and police officer, who has been appointed Minister of Safety and Security. Mr. Opik told iWeekend, "Lots of people are building rockets. Asgardia is about building the society to go with them." He continued, "At some point in the future, ordinary people are going to have to inhabit space, and we're not going to build a social infrastructure for mission control. It has to be built by consent, painstakingly and comprehensively," he said. "We have to decide the rules and methods on everything from burials to taxation, from marriage to procreation. My political back catalog tells you that I'm no stranger to dealing with the unexpected. It has never bothered me to be on the far side of convention and target for suspicion of derision. We are getting some big names from science and commerce, and it creates a virtuous cycle. The more people that take us seriously, the more serious it will get." Well, this is Asgardia. This is not science fiction. I've included two videos on Asgardia in this article, and just for the sake of knowing what it's all about, I recommend you go and listen to them. This indeed is not a joke, and the billionaire investors are putting tons of money towards Asgardia and pushing it towards reality. The next article has to do with genetically modified mosquitoes. This is another topic that we've discussed in the pages of Technocracy News and Trends before. In this article, I titled, "GMO Fail, Mosquitoes Breed Despite Kill Switch Gene." Now, this is a little complicated and a little technical, but I want to make it clear to you what's happened here. Some time ago, genetic scientists decided that they were going to create a certain kind of mosquito that would breed with other dangerous mosquitoes where the offspring would not be able to reproduce. This is a very clever way, they thought, to cause the dangerous mosquitoes to die out because the second generation simply could not breed and reproduce. So they allowed these mosquitoes into the wild. Their experiment this time was in Brazil, by the way. And they said, "Everything will be good. We're going to get rid of the bad mosquitoes. We're going to reduce their population. There'll be a big die-off of the second generation, and everybody will be happy that there's not so many mosquitoes in the environment anymore." Well, guess what? They missed the mark. The mosquitoes that were supposed to die, not all of them did die. So now, genetically modified mosquitoes are breeding with the natural or normal mosquitoes in the area, and they are producing a slightly new variety of mosquito that hasn't been seen before. My comments in this article were the first generation was supposed to die, but some didn't. And now the entire mosquito population is at risk of unintended consequences. Oops, from technocrat scientist, is simply not acceptable. And that's about what they're saying right now. Oops, we goofed. Yeah, you goofed all right. You just changed the germline of a mosquito variety in Brazil. And who knows how long it will take for that to spread and what the consequences will be eventually. So the article states, an experimental trial to reduce the number of mosquitoes in a Brazilian town by releasing genetically modified mosquitoes has not gone as planned. Traces of the mutated insects have been detected in the natural population of mosquitoes, which was never supposed to happen. The deliberate release of 450,000 transgenic mosquitoes in Jacobina, Brazil, has resulted in the unintended genetic contamination of the local population of mosquitoes, according to new research published last week in Scientific Reports. Going into the experimental trial, the British biotech company running the project, Oxitec, assured the public that this wouldn't happen. Consequently, the incident is raising concerns about the safety of this and similar experiments and our apparent inability to accurately predict the outcomes. And of course, herein lies the rub, to accurately predict the outcomes. These technocrat scientists simply don't know what they're promising. And so as people buy the promise and say, oh, okay, release those 450,000 mosquitoes. We trust you. And now all of a sudden there's no basis for trust anymore because their promise was no good. The article continues, the point of the experiment was to curb the spread of mosquito-borne diseases such as yellow fever, dengue, chikungunya, and Zika in the region. To that end, Oxitec turned to OX513A, a proprietary transgenically modified version of the Aedes mosquito. To create its mutated mosquito, Oxitec took a lab-grown strain originally sourced from Cuba and genetically mixed it with a strain from Mexico. The key feature of these bioengineered mosquitoes is a dominant lethal gene that supposedly results in infertile offspring known as the F1 generation. By releasing the OX513A mosquitoes into the wild, Oxitec hoped to reduce the population of mosquitoes in the area by 90%, while at the same time not affecting the genetic integrity of the target population. The OX513A strain is also equipped with a fluorescent protein gene, allowing for easy identification of F1 offspring. So this is not simply just a breeding experiment where two mosquitoes of a different class were put in a jar and forced to mate. These were genetically modified mosquitoes. And the fact that they stuck in there a fluorescent protein gene into the DNA of the mosquito essentially makes it glow in the dark. The article continues, starting in 2013 for a period of 27 consecutive months, Oxitec released nearly 500,000 OX513A males into the wild in that city. A Yale research team led by ecologist and evolutionary biologist Jeffrey Powell monitored the progress of this experiment to assess whether the newly introduced mosquitoes were affecting the genes of the target population. Despite Oxitec's assurances to the contrary, Powell and his colleagues uncovered evidence showing that genetic material from OX513A did in fact trickle to the natural population. Powell said, quote, "The claim was that genes from the release strain would not get into the general population because offspring would die. That obviously was not what happened. That genetic material from OX513A has bled into the native species does not pose any known health risk to the residents of the city, but it is the unanticipated outcome that is concerning," said Powell. "Based largely on laboratory studies, one can predict what the likely outcome of the release of transgenic mosquitoes will be, but genetic studies of the sort we did should not be done during and after such releases to determine if something different from the predicted occurred. Indeed, lab tests conducted by Oxitec prior to the experiment suggested that around 3-4% of the F1 offspring would survive into adulthood, but it was presumed these lingering mosquitoes would be too weak to produce, rendering them infertile. These predictions, as new research shows, were wrong." It's hard to even read on in this article. It's very distressing. These technocrat geneticists say they know what they're doing. They say they have a complete handle on the technology. They're using the new CRISPR technology, by the way, to accomplish this. And a mosquito is a very simple organism compared to humans. Nevertheless, geneticists are using CRISPR to modify all types of organisms on planet Earth, from insects to animals, to food, to grains, and to humans. And they say the same thing every time. We know what's going on. We are the scientists. We are the smart ones here. And we have this totally under control. And then when you get to the other side of the experiment, oops, didn't work. Well, I guess we made a mistake. Back to the old drawing board. Well, my friends, this is absolutely not acceptable that the DNA structure of species on planet Earth should be permanently changed by these moronic technocrat geneticists who think they know everything, but clearly don't. They are not in control of their science. They do not know what the outcomes will be. And the people who will suffer for this are not them, but it's the citizens of communities all over the world. This is absolutely insane. Well, this is the first major fail of a GMO experiment that is definitively documented by other scientists who have been watching it from the start. And we just wonder how many other genetic experiments are underway around the world that are not being watched so closely. Time will tell. We'll be watching. The last story today is a follow-up on the opportunity zones that we talked about some time ago on Technocracy News and Trends. This article is titled, Rockefeller Foundation Launches National Opportunity Zones Academy, a new initiative. I wrote at the top of this, Technocracy News was correct in pegging opportunity zones as a vehicle to railroad sustainable development in underserved areas in cities and counties. Now, Rockefeller Foundation has jumped in with a major new program called National Opportunity Zones Academy. I included the titles and links to three other articles that recently appeared. One was an interview with Catherine Austin Fitz, in which we discussed opportunity zones in some detail. Another article, Opportunity Zones, a Technocrat Deception to Plunder America, I wrote personally. And another article, 8,700 Opportunity Zones in the U.S. Targeted for Smart City Infrastructure. This article is actually a press release issued by the Rockefeller Foundation, and I reproduced it in full in this post. It states, the Rockefeller Foundation and Smart Growth America, that's SGA, today announced the launch of a National Opportunity Zones Academy, which will help cities drive sustainable growth in opportunity zones by attracting socially responsible investment. Five cities have been selected to participate in the academy, including Chicago, Greater Miami and the Beaches, Pittsburgh, Seattle, and Norfolk, Virginia. The foundation will award a $400,000 grant to Smart Cities America to fund the academy. SGA's technical assistance team and its LOCUS program will work directly with each participating city to create place-based, community-led approaches to developing sustainable growth and development strategies that help transform selected opportunity zones into economically thriving and socially inclusive, walkable neighborhoods. The announcement of the Academy follows the Foundation's launch of its community capacity building initiatives, which will benefit vulnerable communities through the opportunity zones created in the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Communities have the potential to be completely transformed by the billions of dollars in capital created by the Opportunity Zones tax credit, but only if we make a deliberate effort to ensure investments benefit those the policy is intended to serve, said Dr. Rajiv Shah, president of the Rockefeller Foundation. The Opportunity Zones Academy will prioritize mobilizing capital and helping cities meet the needs of those who live and work in opportunity zones. I remind you, by the way, that opportunity zones are supposed to be underserved areas, that is, areas that lean to the poverty side of the economic equation. In many cases, there's very little population in some opportunity zones, which means that they'll be looking for new residents in those areas. The Opportunity Zones Academy will give member cities access to three core benefits. These include, number one, bespoke technical assistance to increase local capacity to achieve equitable development in opportunity zones. Number two, socially responsible investors through curated introductory events and online investment portals. And three, sharing the best practices through peer-to-peer learning amongst the five participating cities. Smart Growth America and its LOCUS Coalition have deep experience working with and empowering communities to be more economically, socially, and environmentally sustainable, and will leverage that expertise to develop and facilitate the program. Today's news of five cities banding together illustrates the urgency of community leaders accessing the tools, resources, and the data they need to ensure equitable, sustainable, and community beneficial investment in their opportunity zones, said Calvin Gladney, president and CEO of Smart Growth America, a national nonprofit dedicated to ensuring that all Americans can share in the prosperity that comes from building livable, walkable, and healthier places. Through our Locus National Coalition of Triple Bottom Line developers and investors, we will leverage our thought leadership on Opportunity Zones to co-create practical win-win solutions with this impressive roster of cities, examples that countless other community leaders, investors, and elected officials can follow. So we see throughout this article, it's all about sustainable development. It's all about Agenda 21 and 2030 Agenda. It's all about technocracy. The money that will be used to drive this program comes from new investment into Opportunity Zones. Where this investment comes from is from the very rich billionaire type people who have stock or real estate with very low capital gains base. That means that if they sell it, virtually 100% of the sale of the property will result in a capital gains tax. In many cases, a huge capital gains tax. In many cases, so large that the people simply just will not sell those assets and it becomes locked up capital. The concept behind Opportunity Zones was to offer a tax-free exchange, essentially, where people could sell their low-cost-based assets, reinvest them into Opportunity Zones with no tax consequences. Read that to mean they pay no taxes, and they simply reinvest the money in these other supposedly low-income areas, but that's not always the case. So essentially, this is a program for the rich, by the rich, and unto the rich. If it ends up benefiting actual citizens in the community, it will be surprising. In almost every community in the world that's tried to convert to a smart city format, costs have gone up. They find themselves inhabited by the richer element of society. They displace the poorer elements of society. And in many cases, some of those people drop into homelessness. Well, this is another area to keep an eye on, Opportunity Zones. And indeed, we will. In the pages of Technocracy News and Trends. I'm Patrick Wood. We'll see you next time.